It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Still to come this morning, the legendary cartoonist Jules Feiffer. At age 85, he has released his first graphic novel, call it a comic book noir thriller, entitled Kill My Mother. Also today, also still to come, I should say, before the end of the program, are airline tickets always cheaper on sites like Orbitz or Kayak, and we will break down the latest dust-up between American Airlines and Orbitz. You cannot find American tickets there at the moment. But right now, New York is a hot spot for the illegal sale of ivory from elephants killed for their tusks. And now new research shows that 100,000 African elephants were poached for their ivory tusks between 2010 and 2012. That amounts to about 3% of the elephant population being killed off each year. That's higher than the replacement rate. So if poaching continues at that rate, African elephants could be extinct in a century. And this after decades of awareness campaigns and new laws and anti-poaching crackdowns. Why didn't they work? How endangered are the elephants of the world? Joining me now from Nairobi, Kenya, is Save the Elephants founder and CEO, Ian Douglas Hamilton, who co-authored this new study. Welcome to WNYC and hello from New York.
Hello from Nairobi. It's great to be here.
We've seen an uptick in elephant killings in Africa since 2008, you and others have reported, with a peak in 2011 when 40,000 African elephants were poached in that one year. What's behind the increase?
Definitely the driver of the illegal trade is demand of ivory, principally from China.
Principally from China. Why China? I mean, it's, you know, I see the ivory market got hot, that reignited demand after there was a drop-off in demand. Ivory in that case came from elephants that had died of natural causes and weren't poached, I think, in some years before 2008 or so. So what exactly is going on in China?
I think what's going on is that they're getting very much wealthier, and a lot of the people buying ivory don't have the first clue that it causes the death of an elephant practically every time you buy ivory. So we did have a situation like this before. It's not the first time we've had a holocaust of elephants. We had it throughout the 70s and the 80s. And it came to an end when we had an international ivory trade ban that gave us a ceasefire in East Africa, at least, for about 20 years, from 1989 to 2009. 2009 was another tipping point, and that's when the current crisis really became hot and culminated in this terrific figure of 100,000 elephants killed over those 3 years.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio as we talk about the very disturbing trend toward more elephant poaching and killing, more than the birth rate of elephants can probably replace, according to our guest, Save the Elephants founder and CEO, Ian Douglas Hamilton, who is with us from Nairobi, Kenya today. And if anybody wants to call in on this, 212-433-WNYC is our phone number, 433-9692. Ian, before we lay this all at the feet of the growing wealthy population in China, from what I've read, the U.S. is the second largest destination market for illegally trafficked wildlife in general, and New York in particular, I've read, is a hot spot for illegal ivory. In fact, this month, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed a new law that bans the sale of all ivory less than 100 years old in New York State and increases penalties for those caught buying or selling ivory outside of that category. So there was a perception here that there was enough of a problem here that it needed to be addressed in a new state law, which did get passed and signed. So what can you tell us about New York as a problem city for the elephants of the world?
Well, America in general is part of the problem. But when we say it's the second largest, it's very much in terms of numbers of items sold rather than total weight. I don't know that America at the moment is going to be a problem. The fact that America is showing such a good conscience and has led the way by burning its own stock of illegal ivory is encouraging. I believe that America could show joint leadership with China that could completely turn the situation around. But unless we curb demand, it doesn't matter how many anti-poaching projects we have or anti-trafficking projects, it will fail if people still want to buy this stuff. And it's going to be vital to turn off that demand.
So it's about raising awareness primarily, since you say most of the buyers of ivory don't realize that they're contributing to the poaching of elephants and they're endangering.
I think that's right. And I don't think that the buyers of antique ivory are endangering anything, but fresh ivory is really, really dangerous. And it's important that we see this leadership coming from the States, because other nations may follow. The Chinese, in fact, did burn part of their own ivory stock. And I do think that they hold the key to saving elephants for the future.
Do you think the standard in the new New York State law is about right, the banning of sale of all ivory less than 100 years old?
Well, I think the principle is great. I'm not sure it has to be quite so stringent as saying banning ivory for 100 years. It happens that our team of international scientists with Save the Elephants and scientists from Colorado and Utah have, and Columbus University in New York, have actually found a very accurate way of aging ivory by looking at the isotopes. It gives the age that the ivory was laid down. So it's possible actually to use this as a forensic technique to take a piece of ivory and say when that elephant died. So I think if it would be possible to have maybe a lower bar than 100 years ago. But the general thing is a very good move. The principle is absolutely right.
And do you think a law like that at the level of a state in the United States can have an impact on the poaching trade?
Well, I'm sure you can. As you said, it's all a matter of raising an awareness. And New York has always been quite a leader in this. In fact, it's one of the things that encourages me is that there has been a worldwide momentum towards understanding what's happening. And in that, maybe lies a salvation. If we can get a worldwide coalition to stop the killing, stop the trafficking, and stop the demand, I believe that we can still roll back this wave that's leading towards elephant extinction.
Let's take a phone call. Patricia in Plainfield. You're on WNYC. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, thank you.
Hi. I love your show. I have a crazy idea. Is it possible that we can tranquilize the elephants, cut off one tusk, leave a portion of the other where no one would want to kill it for its ivory, and take what the tusk that we take off the elephant, store it at the Smithsonian where no one has access to it, so then it won't go into the market?
Interesting question. Ian?
I think the idea is great to try to render all ivory beyond market forces. But actually cutting tusks off living elephants, first of all, won't remove all the ivory from the elephant. They have a nerve that grows up through the core of the ivory. And unfortunately, if you do cut the ivory off, you mustn't cut the nerve because you really hurt the elephant. And if you leave the nerve, you're leaving enough ivory to still be an incentive for poachers to kill that animal.
And there's no way to harvest ivory from living elephants, like, I'm sure this is a horrible analogy, but like wool is taken off sheep, something like that, and then the tusks or portions of tusks would grow back. There would be no such biological possibility?
Well, there's lots of possibilities. Unfortunately, the truth is that if you have any ivory trade, it leads to a vast illegal parallel trade. And that is what's undermined all the attempts at regular harvesting in the past. We've simply come to the conclusion that that doesn't work. And now there's an international ivory trade ban that is endorsed by all the nations of the world. So that is progress. And I think it's better to keep it that way rather than to talk about plans for harvesting ivory in any way at all.
Burl on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I own own an ivory bracelet that was from, it was given to me as a gift in Sierra Leone in late 60s, and I feel so bad. I sort of don't know what to do about it. I love it, and it's has great memories, but it's such a bad item.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, if it's beautiful and if you love it, you should probably lock it away if you're embarrassed by it. You know, I used to have ivory too before it was a threat to elephants, and I've got rid of all my ivory. So I don't think it's a good idea to actually own it at the moment. But
to display it? Since she's owned this, it sounds like for decades, you're saying it's not a good idea to wear it, to display it in public, right?
Exactly. But it can't harm if you lock it away in a cupboard, I guess.
You good with that, Burl?
Well, I haven't worn it in so long, so I guess it's just... But I want to wear it, and I haven't had the stomach to wear it in a long time. So, wow.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your call. You know, Ian, go ahead. Did you want to say something about that?
Yeah, I did, really. This whole question of owning ivory and trading in ivory is a very, very important issue. So long as there are stocks of ivory in the world, there's going to be a threat to elephants. And when stocks build up in Africa from animals that have either been poached or died naturally, there's always a temptation to relax the ivory trade ban. So there's a new scheme we're working with called Stop Ivory that intends actually to work with those African nations who have taken the dramatic step of renouncing any future trade in ivory. And they include countries like Botswana and Tanzania and many others. There's an initiative underway to try to reward those countries by better programs to help them in their conservation efforts and their community wildlife efforts. And it's all centered around ivory. It's a very symbolic material, ivory. And I think it can be used for the good as well as the bad.
I think it's important for us to point out, too, that this is not only about endangered elephants. I want to play a clip of then-Secretary of State Hillary Clinton from 2012 speaking about illegal wildlife trafficking at the State Department and some of the other implications and ramifications. Listen.
Diseases are spreading to new corners of the globe through wildlife that is not properly inspected at border crossings. Park rangers are being killed. And we have good reason to believe that rebel militias are players in a worldwide ivory market worth millions and millions of dollars a year.
Ian, is she raising important issues there?
She gave an incredibly important speech, and not any, it really alerted people who would never have thought about these issues before in the diplomatic community and in all sorts of high government reaches. Since then, the Clinton Global Initiative has started an initiative to stop the illegal killing of elephants, stop the trafficking, and stop the demand. And it's helped to foster this vital world coalition that's needed if we're going to save the elephants. So, yes, it was a very, very important speech, that one.
Is this just an Africa-specific poaching problem, by the way? Because there are elephants elsewhere in the world, aren't there?
It is mainly an African issue because in the rest of the world, in Asia, the females do not carry tusks.
Oh.
But for the males, which do carry tusks, it is a big issue, and many, many of the big tuskers of Asia, in India and other countries, have already been killed for their ivory.
You know, sometimes when we talk about endangered species, people take a step back and wonder why we romanticize certain large mammals, including elephants, but we don't care so much if other smaller, less sort of children's book-friendly animals or plants die out. Do you ever think about that question?
I think about it all the time. You know, frogs are terribly endangered across the world, poor things. And I just hope that the issues raised by the big and dramatic and charismatic elephant can have a spin-off that will cover the frogs and the pangolins and all the rare and endangered species, some of them very small. They're all significant.
You're dedicating your life to this. Why do you love elephants?
Well, I love them because I've lived with them now for nearly 50 years and have been intimately involved with studying them, and I've found many admirable and interesting characteristics, and they are animals that have evolved these quite independently from human beings, but they've come to the same sort of social endpoints where they have a community life, a family life. They go out for each other in an altruistic way. They have elaborate communications and a long childhood where they learn from their parents. In many ways, they're like us. And in many ways, they're complicated like us, too. There's good elephants. There's also bad elephants. They're antisocial. So I'm completely hooked on them. And I think they're a very empathetic animal that we can use to address a whole range of important environmental, ecological, conservation, and human issues.
What does a bad elephant do?
It's very antisocial. It might be very unpleasant to other elephants. Of course, they're sometimes bad to human beings, but you can forgive them for that because they're usually very highly provoked.
Let's take a call from somebody who is just in Tanzania, Polly in Williamsburg. Polly, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. I was calling to talk about the fact that China has done a lot of work in Africa, especially in Tanzania, building roads, doing great things. But part of what they've brought in are sort of an underworld of not so great people. And from what I heard from the people that I knew in Tanzania was that basically Chinese businessmen are coming into Tanzania and paying people sort of up front to go out into the bush and get tusks from elephants. And I'm curious if your guest can talk on this, because it's really upsetting and it's really sad for me to know that this is going on.
Ian?
I think it's quite right. The Chinese are actually quite popular in the parts of Africa I've seen because of what they do for development. But there are criminal elements, and the whole of the ivory trade is now connected with large-scale organized crime. So it's regrettable these people exist, and they're not only Chinese, and they're what we've got to fight now with every means at our disposal.
Polly, were you there as a tourist on safari?
I was there at the beginning as a reporter and then later as a tourist.
I'm curious if on your tourist days, the tour guides, as they were taking you out in the vans or however they did it, were talking about this issue. Is this something that they talk up to the people who come for pleasure?
Yes, they very much do. The guides on safari definitely ask us to help them with the anti-poaching reforms and to give money to anti-poaching, especially to pay for, you know, the locals. I mean, I understand why many of them do go out and poach, because they're very poor and it's a ton of money.
Yes.
And so they ask us to help pay for these people to be, you know, soldiers out there defending the elephants versus sending them out there to kill elephants.
Yeah. Well, we have everything, you know. We also have community awareness in Kenya and Tanzania that is leading to far greater involvement of local people in anti-poaching. But I would say that one of the greatest hopes is recent changes we've seen in Chinese awareness. I have personally met both Yao Ming, the great basketball player, and Li Bingbing, who've come out to help a program called Wild Aid and a program called of the United Nations, and they came to experience elephants at first hand. And we were privileged to introduce them to the living elephants. They were completely fascinated and entranced by them, and then to be brought face to face with a carcass that had its face cut away for the ivory, which deeply shocked them. So I think just as demand changed in the West and it changed in Japan, so it can change in China. It's just a race against time to hope that we can do it with such vast numbers of people in time to save the elephants.
Do you consider the safari industry pro-elephant, pro-wildlife? I did it myself for a few days. I was in Kenya one time on a volunteer project, and at the end of it took a few days to go on some of the commercial, you know, safari trips. And for me as a tourist, it was one of the most awesome experiences of my life to see the elephants and the giraffes and the wildebeest and, you know, and just feel connected to a part of the natural world that I would have no way of experiencing here. It was just incredible as an experience. But do you consider them positive or negative?
Oh, they're totally positive. The whole future also is bound up in it. And the safari industry has increased the awareness by bringing people face to face with the wonders of nature. It's one of the reasons why we've got such a strong support for elephants now and why there is a hope that we can change the cycle again and break away from this demand for ivory and illegal killing.
From Nairobi, Kenya, the founder and CEO of Save the Elephants, Ian Douglas Hamilton, who co-authored this new study indicating that the rise in poaching for ivory from the tusks in recent years is depleting the elephant population in Africa faster than the birth rate is replacing them. So if this trend continues, it would take a century, but African elephants could go extinct. So he's sounding the alarm. Ian, thank you very much for spending some time with us. Good luck out there.
Thank you so much.